Chapter 6, Part 3. I cannot, my lord, forbear disclosing my sentiments with respect to the persecution now carrying on. I think it cruel and unnecessary. I tremble at the manner of putting to death, as it resembles more the slaughter of calves and sheep than the execution of human beings. I will relate to your lordship a dreadful scene, of which I was myself an eyewitness. 70 Protestants were cooped up in one filthy dungeon together. The executioner went in among them, picked out one from among the rest, blindfolded him, led him to an open place before the prison, and cut his throat with the greatest composure. He then calmly walked into the prison again, bloody as he was, and with the knife in his hand selected another, and dispatched him in the same manner. And this, my lord, he repeated, until the whole number were put to death. I leave it on your lordship's feelings to judge of my sensations upon this occasion. My tears now wash the paper upon which I give you the recital. Another thing I must mention, the patience with which they met death. They seemed all resignation and piety, fervently praying to God and cheerfully encountering their fate. I cannot reflect without shuddering how the executioner held the bloody knife between his teeth. What a dreadful figure he appeared, all covered with blood, and with what unconcern he executed his barbarous office. A young Englishman who happened to be at Rome was one day passing by a church when the procession of the host was just coming out. A bishop carried the host, which the young man perceiving, he snatched it from him, threw it upon the ground, and trampled it under his feet, crying out, "You wretched idolaters, who neglect the true God to adore morsel of bread!" This action so provoked the people that they would have torn him to pieces on the spot. But the priest persuaded them to let him abide by the sentence of the Pope. When the affair was presented to the Pope, he was so greatly exasperated that he ordered the prisoner to be burnt immediately. But a cardinal dissuaded him from this hasty sentence, saying that it was better to punish him by slow degrees, and to torture him, that they might find out if he had been instigated by any particular person to commit so atrocious an act. This being approved, he was tortured with the most exemplary severity, notwithstanding which they could only get these words from him, "It was the will of God that I should do as I did." The Pope then passed this sentence upon him. 1. That he should be led by the executioner naked to the middle through the streets of Rome. 2. That he should wear the image of the devil upon his head. 3. That his breeches should be painted with the representation of flames. 4. That he should have his right hand cut off. 5. That after having been carried about thus in the procession, he should be burnt. When he heard this sentence pronounced, he implored God to give him strength and fortitude to go through it. As he passed through the streets, he was greatly derided by the people, to whom he said some severe things respecting the Romish superstition. But a cardinal who attended the procession, overhearing him, ordered him to be gagged. When he came to the church door, where he trampled on the host, the hangman cut off his right hand and fixed it to a post. Then two tormentors with flaming torches scorched and burned his flesh all the rest of the way. At the place of execution he kissed the chains that were to bind him to the stake. A monk, presenting the figure of a saint to him, he struck it aside, and then being chained to the stake, fire was put to the faggots, and he was soon burnt to ashes. A little after the last-mentioned execution, a venerable old man, who had long been a prisoner in the Inquisition, was condemned to be burnt, and brought out for execution. When he was fastened to the stake, a priest held a crucifix to him, on which he said, "If you do not take that idol from my sight, you will constrain me to spit upon it." The priest rebuked him for this with great severity, but he bade him remember the first and second commandments, and refrain from idolatry, as God himself had commanded. He was then gagged that he should not speak any more. The fire being put to the faggots, he suffered martyrdom in the flames. An account of the persecutions in the Marquisate of Saluces. The Marquisate of Saluces, on the south side of the valleys of Piedmont, was in A.D. 1561 principally inhabited by Protestants, when the Marquis, who was proprietor of it, began a persecution against them at the instigation of the people, of the Pope. He began by banishing the ministers, and if any of them refused to leave their flocks, they were sure to be imprisoned and severely tortured. However, he did not proceed so far as to put them to death. Soon after, the Marquisate fell into possession of the Duke of Savoy, who sent circular letters to all the towns and villages that he expected people should all conform to go to Mass. The inhabitants of the Saluces, upon receiving this letter, returned a general epistle in answer. The Duke, after reading the letter, did not interrupt the Protestants for some time, but at length he sent them word that they must either conform to the Mass or leave his dominions in 15 days. The Protestants, upon this unexpected edict, sent a deputy to the Duke to obtain his revocation, or at least have it moderated, but their remonstrances were in vain, and they were given to understand that the edict was absolute. Some were weak enough to go to Mass in order to avoid banishment and preserve their property. Others removed with all their effects to different countries. And many neglected the time so long they were obliged to abandon all they were worth and leave the Marquisate in haste. Those who unhappily stayed behind were seized, plundered, and put to death.
An account of the persecutions in the valleys of Piedmont in the 17th century. Pope Clement VIII sent missionaries into the valleys of Piedmont to induce the Protestants to renounce their religion, and these missionaries, having erected monasteries in several parts of the valleys, became exceedingly troublesome to those of the Reformed, where the monasteries appeared, not only as fortresses to curb, but as sanctuaries for all such to fly to, as had any ways injured them. The Protestants petitioned the Duke of Savoy against these missionaries, whose insolence and ill usage were become intolerable. But instead of getting any redress, the interest of the missionaries so far prevailed that the Duke published a decree in which he declared that one witness should be sufficient in a court of law against a Protestant, and that any witness who convicted a Protestant of any crime whatever should be entitled to 100 crowns. It may be easily imagined, upon the publication of a decree of this nature, that many Protestants fell martyrs to perjury and avarice, for several villainous Papists would swear anything against the Protestants for the sake of the reward, and then fly to their own priests for absolution from their false oaths. If any Roman Catholic, of more conscience than the rest, blamed these fellows for their atrocious crimes, they themselves were in danger of being informed against and punished as favourers of heretics. The missionaries did all they could to get the books of the Protestants into their hands in order to burn them. When the Protestants, doing their utmost endeavours to conceal their books, the missionaries wrote to the Duke of Savoy, who, for the heinous crime of not surrendering their Bibles, prayer books, and religious treatises, sent a number of troops to be quartered on them. These military gentry did great mischief in the houses of the Protestants, and destroyed such quantities of provisions that many families were thereby ruined. To encourage as much as possible the apostasy of the Protestants, the Duke of Savoy published a proclamation wherein he said, "To encourage the heretics to turn Catholics, it is our will and pleasure, and we do hereby expressly command, that all such as shall embrace the holy Roman Catholic faith shall enjoy an exemption from all and every tax for the space of 5 years, commencing from the day of their conversion." The Duke of Savoy likewise established a court called the Council for Extirpating the Heretics. This court was to enter into inquiries concerning the ancient privileges of the Protestant churches, and the decrees which had been, from time to time, made in favour of the Protestants. But the investigation of these things was carried on with the most manifest partiality. Old charters were wrested to a wrong sense, and sophistry was used to pervert the meaning of everything which tended to favour the Reformed. As if these severities were not sufficient, the Duke soon after published another edict, in which he strictly commanded that no Protestant should act as a schoolmaster or tutor, either in public or private, or dare to teach any art, science, or language, directly or indirectly, to persons of any persuasion whatever. This edict was immediately followed by another, which decreed that no Protestant should hold any place of profit, trust, or honour. And to wind up the whole, the certain token of an approaching persecution came forth in a final edict, by which it was positively ordered that all Protestants should diligently attend Mass. The publication of an edict containing such an injunction may be compared to unfurling the bloody flag, for murder and rapine were sure to follow. One of the first objects that attracted the notice of the Papists was Mr. Sebastian Bazin, a zealous Protestant, who was seized by the missionaries, confined, tormented for 15 months, and then burnt. Previous to the persecution, The missionaries employed kidnappers to steal away the Protestants' children, that they might privately be brought up Roman Catholics. But now they took away the children by open force, and if they met with any resistance, they murdered the parents. To give greater vigour to the persecution, the Duke of Savoy called a general assembly of the Roman Catholic nobility and gentry, when a solemn edict was published against the Reformed, containing many heads, and including several reasons for extirpating the Protestants, among which were the following. 1. For the preservation of the papal authority. 2. That the church livings may be all under one mode of government. 3. To make a union among all parties. 4. In honour of all the saints, and of the ceremonies of the Church of Rome. This severe edict was followed by a most cruel order, published on January 25th, A.D. 1655, under the Duke's sanction, by Andrew Gastaldo, Doctor of Civil Laws. This order set forth that every head of a family, with the individuals of that family, of the Reformed religion, of what rank, degree, or condition soever, none excepted, inhabiting and possessing estates in Lucerne, St. Giovanni, Bibiana, Campiglione, St. Secondo, Lucanetta, La Torre, Finile, and Bricerasio, should, within 3 days after the publication thereof, withdraw and depart, and be withdrawn out of the said places, and translated into the places and limits tolerated by His Highness during his pleasure, particularly Bobbio, Angrogne, Villario, Rorata, and the county of Bonetti, and all this to be done on pain of death, and confiscation of house and goods, unless within the limited time they turned Roman Catholics. A flight with such speed, in the midst of winter, may be conceived as no agreeable task, especially in a country almost surrounded by mountains. The sudden order affected all, and things, which would have been scarcely noticed at another time, now appeared in the most conspicuous light. Women with child, or women just lain in, were not objects of pity on this order for sudden removal, for all were included in the command, and it unfortunately happened that the winter was remarkably severe and rigorous. The papists, however, drove the people from their habitations at the time appointed, without even suffering them to have sufficient clothes to cover them, and many perished in the mountains through the severity of the weather, or for want of food. Some, however, who remained behind after the decree was published, met with the severest treatment, being murdered by the popish inhabitants, or shot by the troops who were quartered in the valleys. A particular description of these cruelties is given in a letter, written by a Protestant, who was upon the spot, and who happily escaped the carnage. "The army," says he, "having got footing, became very numerous, by the addition of a multitude of the neighbouring popish inhabitants, who, finding we were the destined prey of the plunderers, fell upon us with an impetuous fury. Exclusive of the Duke of Savoy's troops and the popish inhabitants, there were several regiments of French auxiliaries, some companies belonging to the Irish brigades, and several bands formed of outlaws, smugglers, and prisoners, who had been promised pardon and liberty in this world, and absolution in the next, for assisting to exterminate the Protestants from Piedmont. This armed multitude, being encouraged by the Roman Catholic bishops and monks, fell upon the Protestants in a most furious manner. Nothing now was to be seen but the face of horror and despair. Blood stained the floors of the houses, dead bodies bestrewed the streets, groans and cries were heard from all parts. Some armed themselves, and skirmished with the troops, and many with their families fled to the mountains. In one village they cruelly tormented 150 women and children after the men were fled, beheading the women, and dashing out the brains of the children. in the towns of Villario and Bobbio, most of those who refused to go to Mass, who were upwards of 15 years of age, they crucified with their heads downwards, and the greatest number of those who were under that age were strangled. Sarah Ratignoll Davin, a woman of 60 years of age, being seized by some soldiers, they ordered her to say a prayer to some saints, which she refusing, they thrust a sickle into her belly, ripped her up, and then cut off her head. Martha Constantine, a handsome young woman, was treated with great indecency and cruelty by several of the troops, who first ravished, and then killed her by cutting off her breasts. These they fried, and set before some of their comrades, who ate them without knowing what they were. When they had done eating, the others told them what they had made a meal of, in consequence of which a quarrel ensued, swords were drawn, and a battle took place. Several were killed in the fray, the greater part of whom were those concerned in the horrid massacre of the woman, and who had practiced such an inhuman deception on their companions. Some of the soldiers seized a man of Thrasinia, and ran the points of their swords through his ears and through his feet. They then tore off the nails of his fingers and toes with red-hot pincers, tied him to the tail of an ass, and dragged him about the streets. They finally fastened a cord around his head, which they twisted with a stick in so violent a manner as to wring it from his body. Peter Simmons, a Protestant, of about 80 years of age, was tied neck and heels, and then thrown down a precipice. In the fall the branch of a tree caught hold of the ropes that fastened him, and suspended him in the midway, so that he languished for several days, and at length miserably perished of hunger. Essay Gassino, refusing to renounce his religion, was cut into small pieces, the soldiers in ridicule saying they had minced him. A woman, named Armand, had every limb separated from each other, and then the respective parts were hung upon a hedge. Two old women were ripped open, and then left in the fields upon the snow where they perished, and a very old woman, who was deformed, had her nose and hands cut off, and was left to bleed to death in that manner. A great number of men, women and children were flung from the rocks and dashed to pieces. Magdalene Bertino, a Protestant woman of La Torre, was stripped stark naked, her head tied between her legs, and thrown down one of the precipices. And Mary Raymondet, of the same town, had the flesh sliced from her bones until she expired. Magdalene Pilate, of Villario, was cut to pieces in the cave of Castolus. Anne Charbonnière had one end of a stick thrust up her body, and the other being fixed in the ground, she was left in that manner to perish. And Jacob Perrin the elder, of the church of Villario, and David, his brother, were flayed alive. An inhabitant of La Torre, named Giovanni Andrea Michialm, was apprehended with four of his children. Three of them were hacked to pieces before him, the soldiers asking him, at the death of every child, if he would renounce his religion. This he constantly refused. One of the soldiers then took up the last and youngest by the legs, and putting the same question to the father, he replied as before, when the inhuman brute dashed out the child's brains. The father, however, at the same moment started from them and fled. The soldiers fired after him, but missed him, and he, by the swiftness of his heels, escaped and hid himself in the Alps. Further persecutions in the valleys of Piedmont in the 17th century. Giovanni Palancion, for refusing to turn papist, was tied by one leg to the tail of a mule and dragged through the streets of Lucerne, amidst the acclamations of an inhuman mob, who kept stoning him, and crying out, "He is possessed with the devil, so that neither stoning nor dragging him through the streets will kill him, for for the devil keeps him alive." They then took him to the riverside, chopped off his head, and left that and his body unburied upon the bank of the stream. Magdalene, the daughter of Peter Fontaine, a beautiful child of 10 years of age, was ravished and murdered by the soldiers. Another girl of about the same age they roasted alive at Villanova, and a poor woman, hearing that the soldiers were coming toward her house, snatched up the cradle in which her infant son was asleep, and fled toward the woods. The soldiers, however, saw and pursued her. When she lightened herself by putting down the cradle and child, which the soldiers no sooner came to, than they murdered the infant, and continuing the pursuit, found the mother in a cave, where they first ravished, and then cut her to pieces. Jacob Michelino, chief elder of the Church of Bobbio, and several other Protestants, were hung up by means of hooks fixed in their bellies, and left to expire in the most excruciating tortures. Giovanni Rastagnal, a venerable Protestant, upwards of 80 years of age, had his nose and ears cut off, and slices cut from the fleshy parts of his body, until he bled to death. 7 persons, viz. Daniel Ciliaggio and his wife, Giovanni Durant, Lodwich Durant, Bartholomew Durant, Daniel Revel, and Paul Reynaud, had their mouths stuffed with gunpowder, which being set fire to, their heads were blown to pieces. Jacob Bironi, a schoolmaster of Rorata, for refusing to change his religion, was stripped quite naked, and after having been very indecently exposed, had the nails of his toes and fingers torn off with red-hot pincers, and holes bored through his hands with the point of a dagger. He then had a cord tied round his middle, and was led through the streets with a soldier on each side of him. At every turning, the soldier on his right-hand side cut a gash in his flesh, and the soldier on his left-hand side struck him with a bludgeon, both saying at the same instant, "Will you go to Mass? Will you go to Mass?" He still replied in the negative to these interrogatories, and being at length taken to the bridge, they cut off his head on the balustrades, and threw both that and his body into the river. Paul Garnier, a very pious Protestant, had his eyes put out, was then flayed alive, and being divided into 4 parts, his quarters were placed on 4 of the principal houses of Lucerne. He bore all his sufferings with the most exemplary patience, praised God as long as he could speak, and plainly evinced what confidence and resignation a good conscience can inspire. Daniel Cardon, of Rocapiata, being apprehended by some soldiers, they cut his head off, and having fried his brains, ate them. 2 poor old blind women of St. Giovanni were burnt alive, and a widow of La Torre with her daughter were driven into the river, and there stoned to death. Paul Giles, on attempting to run away from some soldiers, was shot in the neck. They then slit his nose, sliced his chin, stabbed him, and gave his carcass to the dogs.